Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. These are our main stories. A second schoolgirl abducted in 2014 in the Nigerian town of Chibok has been rescued, according to the Nigerian army.
The Nigerian military issued a statement saying that they rescued about 97 people. One of the people rescued was Sarah Luka. She was one of the Chibok girls school that were abducted 2 years ago.
The World Health Organization has held an emergency meeting on the outbreak of yellow fever in Angola and several other African countries.
Yellow fever outbreak started the end of December in Angola. So far, there were close to 2,500 cases with almost 300 deaths.
And it's Friday. We will air some of your comments on this story on stories we've covered for you this week. So stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin the program in Nigeria, where Amina Ali, the first schoolgirl from Chibok rescued after 2 years of captivity with Boko Haram militants, met President Muhammadu Buhari on Thursday. This is what President Buhari had to say.
The continuation of Amina's education, so abruptly disrupted, will definitely be a priority of the federal government. Amina must be able to go back to school. Will also be involved in ongoing work with Amina, monitoring her progress and letting any additional support she requires.
Now, a spokesman for the Nigerian army said on Thursday that a second schoolgirl who was among the more than 200 schoolgirls abducted from Chibok has been rescued. Her name is Sarah Luka, and she was from the northeastern town of Madagali in the state of Adamawa, which is also a border to Borno state. A photograph of Sarah released by the military shows her wearing a blue hijab. DW's Muhammad Alamin joins me now from northeastern Nigeria.
Yeah, just yesterday night, the Nigerian military issued a statement saying that they rescued about 97 people from Boko Haram camp. One of the people rescued among the 97 was Sarah Luka. She was one of the Chibok girls' school that were abducted 2 years ago. That's what the military says, because even though they say they killed about 35 Boko Haram terrorists while rescuing the 97 persons.
So how did this come about? Why so soon that the military has the capability now to be able to rescue two girls and there are about 200 still remaining?
Well, we cannot actually say how, because unconfirmed reports say the second girl was actually escaped from Sambisa Forest, and three of them were found. A reliable source, however, told journalists that two of the girls were said to have been missing, but they are searching for these two girls that were missing in some of the forests in northeastern Nigeria.
We've also made to understand that there had been discussion between the government, President Muhammadu Buhari's government, and the insurgents. Is that playing any role in the rescuing of these girls?
I don't think so, because what we understand is, you know, the military are now chasing insurgents inside Boko Haram camps in Sambisa. So what we understand is so many of them are trying to escape, and if they happen to be marrying the girls, they try to escape with the girls. So we understand that maybe it's because of that operation that the Boko Haram insurgents are escaping from the forest, and the success of recovering those girls were actually achieved.
So can you maybe give us a bit of an understanding of how it looks like currently at the Sambisa Forest, where the army is currently carrying out its operation to not only rescue these girls, but also get rid of the insurgents?
Sambisa Forest is a very, very, very big forest. One cannot just say this is the actual estimate of the forest. But the military started the operation, and we can understand that they are chasing the Boko Haram insurgent inside the forest. But up to now, according to what sources are saying, they did not reach where the Boko Haram base actually was in the forest.
DW's correspondent in Nigeria's northeast, Muhammad Alamin. The Zambisa forest on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria seems to be one of Boko Haram's tightly guarded strongholds. Troops from the multinational joint task force have been organizing regular raids since January last year to flush out the insurgents and free civilians held captive there. Now, just this month, at least 30 Cameroonian soldiers have been wounded and 2 killed in the forest. DW's Moki Kinseka visited them at the Yaounde Military Hospital and filed this report.
Among the soldiers rushed to the Yaounde Military Hospital after sustaining injuries at the Zambisa Forest is 26-year-old Fabian Go. His battalion destroyed 4 Boko Haram camps, killing at least 100 and arrested 60 fighters. But unfortunately, he stepped on a landmine as they celebrated their victory while returning to their base in Cameroon.
While coming back, our vehicle claims on a mine. That is how we have this shock-based incident. From there, they brought me here. Now, we're having a difference. I'm feeling so happy. It's what we have been waiting since long. Maybe from 2 months now, when my legs will get finished, I can wear my uniform and rangers or go back and continue my mission.
Efforts by Cameroon, Nigeria and Chad's military to rescue Boko Haram captives until now have yielded little results. Buba Bakari, one of the commanders fighting Boko Haram on Cameroon's border around Zambisa, says many Boko Haram captives are being held in the forest.
La forêt de Zambisa, c'est une forêt très, très dangereuse.
Zambisa is a very dangerous forest. I think that is one of Boko Haram's many strongholds because many Cameroonians have lost their lives while struggling to release hostages or fight Boko Haram there. Many Cameroonian hostages we are looking for are in that forest. We need to do everything we can to eliminate Boko Haram from that forest.
Pour enlever Boko Haram de cet endroit.
Buba Bakari declined to explain plans the multinational joint task force has to completely liberate the dreaded forest. So I asked Fonka Muta, a Cameroon state radio journalist who has visited parts of the Zambisa several times, what makes the area so dreaded for the military to recover.
Contrary to what most people think, the Zambisa is not a small zone, you know, that can just be invaded or searched through and through thoroughly. It is actually a huge national park, a big forest reserve, that even the Nigerian government cannot access fully and control fully. And obviously, beyond what popular opinion thinks, that you could just, you know, storm the place and then solve the problem, it is not that easy.
However, troops from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, Niger and Benin last March launched an operation called Tentacle to rid the Zambisa forest of its Boko Haram occupants once and for all. It remains to be seen how soon they achieve their main goal of rescuing the captives held inside, including the Chibok girls.
Moki Kinseka reporting. This is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The World Health Organization, WHO, held an emergency meeting on Thursday to address the worst yellow fever outbreak in decades. The disease has hit Angola and several other African countries. With the support of WHO, Angola has extended its vaccination campaign beyond the capital Luanda into Huambo and Benguela, 2 of the other 5 provinces reporting increased cases. But how big a threat is the yellow fever epidemic to Angola and its neighbors? My colleague Isaac Mugabe put that question to Tariq Yasaravich, a communications officer with WHO.
Well, as you have probably heard, the yellow fever outbreak started the end of December in Angola, So far, there were close to 2,500 cases with almost 300 deaths. In addition to that, we have cases that have been exported to a number of countries, including Democratic Republic of Congo, where we now have a local transmission. There is an unrelated small outbreak in Uganda, too. And this is why World Health Organization is convening today a meeting of the emergency committee to look into the current situation and propose next steps.
How closely is WHO working with the countries affected to stop, you know, the further spread of yellow fever?
Obviously, we are working very closely with the affected countries, but also with neighboring countries in order to try to avoid export of the virus. So far, we have made available more than 11 million of doses of yellow fever vaccines. More than 7.5 million of people in Angola have already been vaccinated. We are also sending 2 million doses to Democratic Republic of Congo and also a number of doses to Uganda. What is really important is that people who are traveling to Angola and from Angola are vaccinated. And that's why we are working with the neighboring countries in order to strengthen surveillance at borders.
It's not the first time that there are such outbreaks like yellow fever in the countries you've mentioned or in the region. Is this particular outbreak related to those that have been reported in the past years?
Well, yellow fever is not a new disease. Yellow fever was there for many, many years, and we had a number of outbreaks. Since the introduction of vaccine and yellow fever initiative, that inclusion of yellow fever vaccine in routine immunization, there was a decrease in number of outbreaks. More than 100 million people in West Africa have been vaccinated in previous years. This outbreak is of a particular concern because it's happening in urban areas. So there were a number of cases in Luanda, in the capital. Now also we have cases in Kinshasa, in DRC. And in urban areas, obviously, it's more difficult to reach necessary coverage of vaccination, and there is lots of movement of people, so there is a greater risk of export, and obviously the population of mosquitoes that are transmitting this virus is also very important.
How challenging has it been for you to work together with these countries affected?
Well, it is really obvious that countries understand the risk yellow fever has upon population, but also upon other parts of life. So countries are really working hard with WHO and other partners to vaccinate as fast as possible affected population in affected regions. It is obviously always a logistical challenge to vaccinate en masse, so massively vaccinate people, especially in the remote areas. But this is something that has been done, and we are working closely with governments in trying to provide all necessary technical assistance.
Tariq Yasarovich, a communications officer at WHO.
Human rights.
Now, the African Union Commissioner for Human Rights, Pansy Tlakula, has urged the Zimbabwean government to ensure that its citizens enjoy their freedoms and rights as written in the constitution. The AU diplomat made the remarks as she wrapped up her four-day visit to Zimbabwe on Thursday. There have been mounting concerns by local, regional and international bodies about the continued disregard of human rights by President Robert Mugabe's administration. The regime is accused of corruption, selective application of the law and forced disappearances of political opponents. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga sent this report.
Addressing journalists in Harare before her departure on Thursday, the African Union Commissioner for Human Rights Advocate Pansy Tlakula said Zimbabwe had adopted one of the continent's best constitutions in 2013. But she said there was a need for its provisions to be implemented so that its citizens can enjoy freedom of expression and have access to information.
I think the constitution of 2013 gives hope to Zimbabwe. And I think it is important for all of us to ensure that sections 61 and 62 of the Zimbabwe constitution are given effect. Because with that kind of a progressive constitution, it is important for those constitutional provisions to be realized or to be made real.
Sections 61 and 62 of Zimbabwe's constitution deal with issues of access to information, freedom of expression, and the media. Despite the adoption of the charter, Zimbabwean authorities have kept a strong hold on access to information and freedom of expression. Several activists and opposition officials have been charged for criticizing President Robert Mugabe. The visit by Ntlakula takes place at a time when rights organizations are complaining of state-sanctioned crackdown against dissenting voices. An example being activist Itai Dzamara was abducted last year for demonstrating against alleged abuses of human rights by President Robert Mugabe's government. He has not been located since. The Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA, is one of the organizations that have complained about lack of media reforms in Zimbabwe. Jacqueline Chikakano is the MISA legal officer in Zimbabwe who made a presentation to the visiting AU diplomat.
While the number of violations has decreased, the legislative environment is not changed, which means that the threat remains. And if the state machinery so wants, they can use that machinery and legislative machinery to hurt the media. So yes, we've made some strides, but it needs to be complemented with progressive legislative reform so that the media is really free and know and live knowing that they are begged, that freedom is begged by the laws, as it is also begged by the constitution.
President Robert Mugabe's government has indicated that it will repeal or amend more than 400 laws as they do not conform with Zimbabwe's constitution. The AU's Ntlakula said if this is done, Zimbabweans would enjoy higher levels of access to information and freedom of expression and the media.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. Following years of steady growth and economic success, Ethiopia has been dubbed the African Lion. But the ongoing drought and a downturn in investment have taken their toll. A recent conference in Munich was held to attract investors from Germany. This report by Mantigaf Tutsileshi from DW's Amharic Service is now presented by Oletangen Jr.
Yenaja Desi Balai, Ethiopia's Minister of Planning and head of his country's business delegation to Germany, did not waste time in delving into the reasons German businesses should invest in Ethiopia.
Ethiopia has many things that you need to look into for making a decision about where to invest. Conducive business environment, political stability, sound economic policies, macroeconomic stability, abundant natural resources, and trainable workforce.
For the past 5 years, Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous country, has indeed seen rapid growth. According to official figures, the total value of Ethiopian exports to Germany, mainly coffee and textiles, is set to increase to 185 million euros, or $210 million in 2016. On the other hand, German exports to Ethiopia are worth more, amounting to 238 million euros, or $270 million. Zamedene Nagatu, managing director of Ernst & Young and an Ethiopian government advisor, echoed the reasons why Germans should invest in Ethiopia.
The biggest economy in Africa is Nigeria. South Africa got enthroned 2 years ago by Nigeria. I know South African friends are not very happy about that. Third is Angola, and guess who is number four? Ethiopia.
However, the International Monetary Fund, in its recent outlook, said overall growth in Ethiopia was projected to slump to 4.5%, down from 10.2% for the previous year. One of the contributing factors is said to be the drought that has gripped the country. Figures compiled by the Ethiopian government and its humanitarian partners suggest that more than 10 million Ethiopians are now critically short of food. Critics have time and again pointed to the other side of Ethiopia's economic success story. Its capital is home to the African Union headquarters, but political stability in the country remains elusive. Defining Ethiopia as a safe investment destination has become even more difficult for delegates in Munich after demonstrators pushed past security guards to protest against a lack of democracy in the country. One of the protesters, who had traveled several hundred kilometers from the city of Leverkusen and who would give her name only as Gigi for fear of repression, told DW that while she knew about the crucial benefit of foreign investment for development, appropriate compensation was needed for farmers evicted from their homesteads.
If you don't pay compensation and rather let the farmer face the problem alone, then what will be the fate of that person in a country like Ethiopia?
In investment, as in marriage, as the saying goes, it takes two to tango. And only then will the Ethiopian lion be ready to jump.
That report was written by Mantigav Tutsilashi.
Your say.
It's that time of the week when we turn the microphone to you, the listener, to hear what you have to say about the stories we've been covering here for the last week. Jane Yingi and Temitope Omolade now with this week's Your Say.
Well, let's take you through some of your comments that we received through our social media platforms, letters, SMS, and emails.
Lots of conversations still going on about one of the Chibok missing girls who was found alive. 19-year-old Amina Nkeke was reunited with her mom 2 years after she and more than 200 other girls were kidnapped by Boko Haram. She was found in the Sambisa forest, and the search for the other missing girls continues.
This is good news to Nigeria, says Edgar Zombas. If the past administration was keen in searching for the Chibok girls, this would be history by now.
Abdul Rashid also got in the conversation, and for him, it's a job well done. Let's pray for the release of more or all the remaining girls.
But Isaiah Uche is of another view. He started by saying, wow, the rescue came just right on time.
Okay. What does he mean by that?
Timmy, according to him, this is a diversionary tactic by President Buhari's administration so that people can forget about the protests that were called by labor unions due to high fuel prices.
Andrew Chidi is of the thought, instead of moving this traumatized girl up and down like a trophy, the government should immediately storm Sambisa Forest and rescue the remaining girls.
Another story that caught the attention of our listeners is what has been termed as police brutality in Kenya. This comes after Monday's opposition protesters who've been calling for the dissolution of the Electoral Commission were violently dispersed by anti-riot police.
Videos and photos taken circulated widely on the internet and prompted hashtag stop police brutality.
Now, Geoffrey Godwin from Tanzania has some advice to the youth. He says, please don't be used by politicians as their bridge to get to power, referring to the ones that participated in the protest.
For Kamau Mutwinga, the only solution is for those injured to sue the police department for violation of civil rights and assault.
Eric Agade says the protesters also need training on how to hold lawful and peaceful demonstrations. Sometimes those demonstrations get out of hand.
Last but not least, a commentary by our own very own Derek Cobb on how heads of states across Africa use violence to remain in power or even silence their opponents with monetary gifts or by offering them government positions has attracted lots of responses.
George 3000 commented, how about letting the African Union handle these cases? He doesn't understand why a bunch of European nationals are always telling Africans how to behave.
Nihon Daisuke is of the thought, why should the world do anything about it? The world did plenty about Saddam and Gaddafi, and look how that worked out.
A controversial topic indeed, Timmy. That is all we had time for today. Just a reminder, we appreciate all your feedback, so keep them coming.
Jane Yingi and Temitope Omolade, thank you. If you'd like to have your comment right here on Africa Link as well, send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49. 1609575510. As always, thank you for listening. From me, Abubakar Jallo in Bonn. Have a pleasant weekend.